Hi, it's Tracy. Before we start, I have a request. Okay, it's a little weird, maybe even a lot weird, but hello, 6.5 million downloads on my podcast, and still we haven't chosen a sponsor, right? Yeah, they just haven't been good enough for us, and that's a little weird too. So I decided I'm going to treat this like a sponsorship spot. Many of you know Marcus, my son, who's been the inspiration behind this podcast, the book, my programs, anything at all to do with ADHD. Well, he is graduating from NYU this May, and boy, are we happy that he did it in 4 years. So anyway, Marcus loves to travel, and so he's spending 6 weeks by himself traveling to 5 countries in South America. I don't know about you, but there's no way in hell that I would go to even one country alone. And so we gave Marcus a very low budget. This trip is a combination of his birthday and graduation gift, and he figured it all out himself. He speaks some Spanish, but he hired a Spanish tutor from Ecuador a couple weeks ago, months maybe, who's a professor at a university there, and this professor is helping him with his conversational Spanish. Marcus also changed his phone to Spanish only and all of his apps, and he only watches Spanish TV in preparation for this trip. So that gives you a little bit of an idea of what Marcus is like. Now, Marcus would ultimately like to earn a PhD in psychology. He's fascinated by the brain, learning differences, and particularly how dyslexia impacts math. For the near future, though, he wants to work for a couple of years in New York City. I never thought he'd say that. He was always looking for more nature. So anyway, he's going on this trip, and what he's trying to do is find a job that he can come back to. He's come very close, but still no cigar. So yes, I am hawking my son's skills on these airwaves. He thinks I'm insane. But I'm like, who knows what interesting people are out there? I mean, I found my husband in a personal ad when no one was doing that. So why not find a job using my podcast? I mean, ultimately, finding a partner or finding a job, it's all the same thing, right? It's marketing, just getting the word out. Right job, right person. So that's my weird request. If you have any leads in New York City, Marcus would love to work in advertising or marketing sales. He's a phenomenal researcher. I promise you, he can find anything. He's very skilled in Excel and financial modeling. He'd be amazing in digital advertising or tech marketing. And beyond his hard skills, he's resilient. He's so smart. And he has an exceptional work ethic. And that's not just his mother talking. He's not like me. He prefers not to challenge the status quo all the time. He actually likes structure and systems. And he has so many ideas about how to make things better, faster, more efficient, simpler. So I'm putting this out there to our incredible community. If you know of any opportunities in digital advertising, tech marketing, or sales that are in New York City and could benefit from a bright, hardworking, and respectful young professional like my son Marcus, send me an email at support@tracyoutsuka.com and I will connect the two of you. Look, Marcus represents the very essence of what we talk about here every week, right? The brilliance of thinking differently. And so does his mother. So thank you for letting me be weird. And now let's get on with the show.
Richard Branson, Michael Phelps, Justin Timberlake, James Carville. Wait a minute. Where are the women? Greta Gerwig, Lisa Ling, Audra McDonald, Simone Biles. That sounds like a list of highly successful titans in a variety of industries. They all have ADHD, but you don't hear much about that now, do you? You know what else you don't hear about? Are the 43% of people with ADHD who are in excellent mental health. Why aren't we talking about them and what they're doing right? I'm your host, Tracy Otsuka, and that's exactly what we do here. I'm a lawyer, not a doctor, a lifelong student, and now the author of my new book, ADHD for Smart-Ass Women. I'm also a certified ADHD coach and the creator of Your ADHD Brain is A-OK, a patented system that helps ADHD women just like you get unstuck and fall in love with their brilliant brains. Here, we embrace our too muchness and we focus on our strengths. My guests and I credit our ADHD for some of our greatest gifts. And to those who still think they're too much, too impulsive, too scattered, too disorganized, I say, no one ever made a difference by being too little. Hello, I am your host, Tracy Otsuka. Thank you so much for joining me here for another episode of ADHD for Smartass Women. You know my purpose. It's always to show you who you are and then inspire you to be it. In the thousands of ADHD women that I've had the privilege of meeting, I've never met a one that wasn't truly brilliant at something, not one. So for all of these reasons, I am just delighted to introduce you to Linda Karenzalis. Linda is a board-certified cognitive specialist and the author of, wait, let me get the book, Misnamed, Misdiagnosed, Misunderstood, Recognizing and Coping with NVLD, Nonverbal Learning Disorder, from Childhood Through Adulthood. She has worked with individuals, Linda has, with NVLD, ADHD, and learning challenges for over 25 years. Her Advantages Learning Center was one of the first programs in the country for neurodivergent learners and provides executive function training and social-emotional learning programs for all ages. Linda is also a social ambassador for the NVLD Project and the host of the podcast NVLD and Neurodivergent Pioneers. Her nationally syndicated column on neurodiversity has been featured in the U.S. Daily Times on the Price of Business online network. Her work has also been featured in Attitudes print and online magazine publications. Welcome, Linda. Finally, you're here.
I know. Finally. It's great to be here.
You all knew. We've been trying to get this together for months, but I'm just delighted that you're finally here. So I want to start because I always start with ADHD. Could you give us a short kind of intro, you know, your origin story around ADHD and how you came to be diagnosed?
Okay. Well, when I was a SLED teacher in the 90s, I'm not going to give my age away, we didn't learn anything about ADHD in our college training. So I was like baptized by fire. I had all these kids that were ADHD, like 16 of them. And it was like romper room. And I realized that I had ADHD because one of the kids in my class's mom was a professor. And I learned from her a lot about ADHD. And then I realized, oh, this is why I'm struggling all the time. So then I got a diagnosis.
And so what were the things that you were struggling with at the time?
A lot of executive functioning things as a teacher. It was overwhelming. I mean, as a teacher, you have to be organized. And I really, really struggled. But thank God I had an assistant that came in and she was just helping me. She was pregnant and she moved, relocated. And so she couldn't get a regular teaching job for the year. So she became my assistant. And that is the luck that I got because she really helped me with my executive functioning stuff, even though I didn't know I had it. She organized me with systems.
Well, and you know, Linda, this is not an uncommon story. I have heard from so many teachers that they absolutely love the teaching part, but it's all the administrative details.
Oh, yeah.
Those silly things like you hand out books and then at the end of the year, you have to make sure you get the right book with the right number back for that particular student. That would kill me.
And it's the IEPs, too. When you're in special ed, you have to do the IEPs. That's a lot.
And so why is that so difficult for someone with ADHD?
Well, it's definitely focusing. It's hard to focus. My mind jumps all over the place from thing to thing. And it's a lot of reference, you know, looking at the computer, figuring out what goes with the student. When you're looking at your student notes, what does that student need? And also the timing factor. It has to be done at a certain time and you can't start them earlier. They give you time to do it. So you have to work quickly and fast. So that was a real challenge for me.
So I'm curious, when did your ADHD diagnoses come in relation to the NVLD diagnosis?
Well, I got the ADHD diagnosis first. And for many years, I didn't know what was wrong. I had a hard time teaching with the social aspect of it. One of the teachers would look at me and say, I already told you that three times on how to do the IEPs because I was in a new school. And it was ironic because here I am talking to a special ed teacher that didn't have any patience.
Yeah.
And so I really got the diagnosis and finally, you know, everything started making sense to me.
So it was the ADHD and the NVLD.
The NVLD really came into play. I didn't know what was wrong. I just could not make friends. I couldn't keep them. It was very traumatic because NVLD, without knowing that you have it, it's devastating because I couldn't understand. I would leave meetings of teaching, not really knowing what I was supposed to do. But I was a great teacher. I got an award from the governor. But, you know, the NVLD, finally, I found somebody. You have to get the right person to diagnosis. And what happened was I was seeing a therapist and I found Sue Thompson's book. I don't know if you've heard of her. She's like one of the first educators, not researchers. And she had, you know what it was? I ordered the book by mistake when I was ordering teaching books.
ADHD.
And it came in and I took it to the therapist and I was like in tears because I wasn't understanding what people were saying all the time. I was asking a lot of questions because people with NVLD, words are our world. They're like our glasses. And people would get annoyed with me because I would ask so many questions. And my dad always said I was going to be a detective and I was going to write a book. He was like, what are you, writing a book? You're asking so many questions. Or because I would just ask so many questions because I couldn't figure it out.
Let's back up right there. This is a perfect time for you to tell us, what is nonverbal learning disorder? So we understand, you know, the context that you're sharing your story in.
Nonverbal learning disorder, at first, it sounds like people don't speak, and I get that all the time. It's just really it's going to be renamed. We could talk about that later. But it means that you don't get a lot of body language, tone of voice. Like, I still don't get jokes, and I can't tell if someone's joking or not all the time. And so it's facial expressions, gestures, body language. So if you think about it, the research, there's all different research, but I'll just pull one out. That 93% of communication is nonverbal. You're only getting 7% of verbal. Can you imagine that? So you're literal, you could be gullible, easily led, and you're at a great disadvantage. So it's also a visual spatial component, which is the core of it, meaning that you might, you know, get lost. So driving for me is difficult, even if I've been somewhere before, even with the navigator.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't judge the distance because visual spatial processing is making sense of what the eyes see.
Right.
Okay. And so it's making sense of, you could be clumsy. You might not be able to judge distances. I just wanted to give you an example instead of just giving you some clinical definition.
Yeah, that's great.
This is the teacher in me. Okay. So you see how these two things look alike? This is toothpaste.
Yeah.
Okay,
right.
This is Vaseline. Now, to me, they look alike.
Okay, I see it. Just so you know, Linda, this is a podcast, although we do a video too. But just in case the people are listening, she's holding up two tubes, and both of them are blue and white, and they look similar, but the toothpaste is much larger than the Vaseline.
Right. So visual discrimination is finding things out of the environment. Like if you go to look for mayonnaise in your refrigerator, it could be right in front of my face, but I can't discriminate it from all the other things. But it's not a vision problem. So here I go. I want to brush my teeth and I put the Vaseline on my toothbrush because I couldn't tell the difference.
Wait, you really did this?
Yes, I did.
Oh my. Okay.
I did. And so a lot of people say they might do this, but the problem is it's chronic. It's constant, like finding my shoes. So I have to be super organized with my shoes, just anything. For visual discrimination. That's an example of visual discrimination. Visual motor is, can you coordinate your body movements? You know, things like you would do in sports, using a copy machine could be frustrating, opening a door. Some people have so severe visual processing that, and with the fine motor, because the eyes and the fine motor work together, that they can't do buttons or zippers. That's not my case, but I will give you another example. I like to give examples because it makes it real. Even if I embarrass myself, it's for the benefit of everybody. Years ago, I went to a CHAD conference And everybody was sitting around having lunch. I didn't know these people, but we're all networking and talking about everything. So I was eating meatballs, and I have a hard time with my fork, and I tend to wave my fork around. I'm not even aware of it. So there was this guy sitting next to me, and my fork went on his white shirt and got gravy on it.
Oh my God.
Yeah, gravy, because other people might know it's sauce, but I'm Italian. So,
yep, that's what my husband's family says too. Yeah.
So I said, I was so sorry. I was so embarrassed. I did it again. And then I kicked somebody under the table. Now think about this. Okay. I'm really masking, and all my effort is to try to, I wasn't masking so well because I was talking and conversing. So for me to have controlled that, I would have had to really focus on that, but then I wouldn't been able to really partake, you know, in the conversation. I'm also ADHD.
Yeah.
So that's like visual motor. So I wanted to crawl under the table. Things like that. Getting lost, reading maps, charts. So math is very difficult for people with NVLD. There's some sensory stuff, a lot of executive functioning, but the core is visual. And that's why we need to get it in the DSM.
That is so interesting. So it's a combination of social and visual spatial. So that leads me to my next question. There are so many symptoms shared with type 1 autism, ADHD,
right,
and also dyslexia.
Yes.
So how is NVLD different? Is it kind of the situation? Is it like with ADHD where you've met one person with ADHD, you've met one person with ADHD?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. The neuropsychs that I talk to, they say nobody fits this profile in the same way.
Mm.
There are some people that are good in math, but I'm going to say the majority are not.
Okay.
So with NVLD, and ADHD, there, you know, and autism, there's a lot of overlap, shared symptoms. But the key is the causes of the symptoms are different.
Okay.
So typically with NVLD and ADHD, it's a lot of executive functioning difficulties. But there could be some social with ADHD. Again, it depends, because a lot of people with ADHD are charismatic and very good socially.
I don't think that's ADHD. I'm convinced.
But there are some.
Because, you know, there's so many.
Right.
I hate this word, but there's so many comorbidities, right? And it's very common.
I hate that word too. I know. If you have trouble with social and your ADHD, typically it's because when you were younger, you weren't focused enough to pay attention to the nonverbal communication. And then if you go back and get some instruction, you're fine.
Yeah.
Because it was really from attention. But with NVLD, it's from visual spatial deficits, reading those things, people's facial expressions.
Oh.
So it's a lot of overlap with the executive function.
And it's also from what you were saying as far as being kind of clumsy and not really understanding how your body moves.
Oh, yeah. Being clumsy and how your body moves. You know, Eric Tivers?
Yeah.
He has NVLD. He has a podcast.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, he does. And we met at the ADHD conference, and I'm going to be on his podcast, but he has it. And I was listening to one of his podcasts, and this is so me. When you take your debit card and you have to put it in the machine, it takes me a while because of the orientation of the card. You know, how it tells you this has to be here and the little chip here. Sometimes the one where you have to slide. Every machine's different. Or we have a lot of wobbles here. So I go in there and you have to put it in the right way vertically. And he said he struggles with that too.
Huh.
So it's orientation as well.
Okay. Now with ADHD, sometimes there are visual spatial problems as well, right? Sense of direction, finding things on a messy desk. Okay. So this is my theory. I just feel like all of these things are all related. All of these labels, right?
Sure.
And whatever, you know, symptoms we have or traits we have, it gets, like, I always think of it as like stars in the sky. And however we draw the circle where the symptoms are, that's the label we get. What do you think about that?
That's a great analogy. Well, I always liken it to a pot of soup.
Mm.
Some pots of soup have more carrots. Some have more beets.
Yeah.
Some have a little less onion. So that's what I say. Funny how we have these analogies, but yes, they do have problems with that, but it's completely different. It might be from attention or processing visual stimuli because it's all over the place, you know, when you're working with papers and computer screens. But this is why they're fighting so hard to get this in the DSM.
Okay.
Which, for those that don't know, it's the Bible of disorders, even though we don't like the name disorders.
Yeah.
Because it really is the core is that visual spatial. They're going to change the name to developmental visual spatial disorder. But great. Now it sounds like we can't see. The other one sounds we don't talk. But, so I did get some information to the DSM committee that was relayed to them, telling them, look, I'm a professional that has it. None of these people on the committee have it.
Uh-huh.
That are professionals.
Yeah.
And that, so this is really, but they don't want to emphasize the social or the communication, because then it's going to, they have to show the committee that is visual spatial, and that it's not, because then if you look at communication, it's just autism.
Yeah.
You know, that's where, or social pragmatic.
What's that? Social pragmatic.
That's just social skills, just understanding language.
Okay.
You know, metaphors, idioms, just it's just another name.
You know, the thing about it, though, is people with autism, though, they are very literal as well, right?
They are literal, but here's the difference.
Okay.
Most, by and large, with autism level one, it's formerly Asperger's, but we say that now, that their affect is, their facial affect is flat. There's not a lot of emotion, and their tone of voice is flat. And it is non-reciprocal communication, whereas someone with ADHD and NVLD, it's a back and forth.
Okay.
You're talking about ideas and feelings. This is straight as if you were taking a lecture in college and just straight factual. There is no non-reciprocal. And that's the major difference. And there's more behavioral stuff.
So people with NVLD, are they typically like you? Are they really animated and kind of, you know, big? Versus more robotic?
It really depends on the person. Well, NVLDers aren't robotic at all. No, that would be more on the spectrum.
Okay.
And they also have more, it's more visible to other people that when you're talking to somebody like that, sometimes they have little stims. Sometimes they're very strong in visual spatial process, so they're good in math. That's the difference.
Autism, right?
Very strong, yes, in visual spatial, good in math.
Yeah.
So, but you can tell, because when you're, I put that in the book, when you have somebody that's on the spectrum, they get a lot more leeway because it's harder to mask that, some of that.
Uh-huh.
It depends where you are. Like a lot of women mask really well that are on the spectrum.
Right.
Better than
right.
men. But there's different levels again. And some of them can't mask at all. Some of them don't even know that they don't know that
right.
there's an issue.
Right.
And NVLDers want to have friends. You know, people on the spectrum, they want to have friends, but not all of them. All of them, most of them want to be, they're isolated.
What would it feel like to jump out of bed every morning in love with your career, your relationships, your life? If you find yourself lying awake at night wondering, who am I really? What would make me the kind of happy that doesn't fade after 2 months? Why am I clear on what I don't want to do, but clueless about how to figure out what I do want? Then join me for my free What Do I Do With My Life Masterclass, where we'll talk about how to become the expert on you and make better, quicker, and more confident decisions in your personal and professional life. Which of the many ideas that you have is the one you should actually pursue? And what would it really look like for you to live to your full potential? If this sounds like a fit for you, join me for my free What Do I Do With My Life Masterclass by going to spyhappy.me/class. See you there.
Yeah, well, and their area of hyperfocus, right? What you're really interested in, you
right.
just want to do that.
Right, right.
So why is NVLD not a formal diagnosis? Why are you all fighting so hard for this?
Well, fighting so hard because we need treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So the treatment is, well, let me go back up a little bit. There's almost 3 million people that have NVLD,
okay.
According to the latest research. They're most likely to have NVLD. Most of them are misdiagnosed with ADHD, or they're misdiagnosed with autism. Because think about it, if there's no other option, that's default. That's where it's going to go. And a lot of diagnosticians do not believe in NVLD. They'll say it doesn't exist. And others, it does. But now they're all coming together worldwide. And there's research, because the NVLD project has done a lot of research. So they're coming together to make this, you know, an official diagnosis. So then after that, there will be interventions, because here's the thing. All the interventions that you can use for ADHD, some for on the spectrum, you can benefit from them. You know, they're the same interventions, but what is not, there are no interventions. So if you're a teacher and you get a child that has NVLD and somebody diagnoses, right now it's not an official diagnosis. It's not covered under anything. So a lot of parents are getting the autistic diagnosis. But there needs to be specific interventions developed for people with NVLD, and there are none. So there's going to be new ones that will be tested and researched.
What are they?
It doesn't cover everything.
What are the interventions for NVLD?
We don't really have any. We're just, it's by the hip, trial and error, shooting from the hip. We need more empirical research, but we're not going to get that until once it gets in the DSM.
Okay.
So some teachers that are aware, you know, what you would need to do is you need to speak very literally and realize, like, I don't know if you remember in the book about Billy, a lot of teachers thought he was being rude.
Yeah.
When he
yeah.
was just saying the way that he thought it was. So you have to teach, the teachers have to be trained.
Billy was the one who the teacher said, would you mind bringing me? I can't remember what it was.
No, that was actually me. I'm sorry. That was my student.
Oh.
He's playing with something and everybody was interested in it. And I'm like, Billy, put that away. And then all the kids were looking at it again. And I'm like, Billy, would you please bring that to me? Now you can tell. He didn't pick up on that. And after class, somebody else, he would have gotten detention or somebody else. Right. But I was keeping notes on these things like 25 years ago. And I said, Billy, why did you do that? Because I had some of those difficulties. And he said, you didn't tell me, you asked me.
Yeah.
That's what he said.
Yeah.
And I explained to him, okay, but I did tell you, even though my words didn't say it.
Uh-huh.
He goes, well, you should have said that in the first place then.
That you wanted it. Wasn't a choice versus the way
that
you
I wanted it.
It
that I yeah. said, Billy, bring me that, not please.
Or
I
mean, would
Billy,
you mind?
Bring me that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or would you mind? But I just was being polite.
Right.
You know. But I gave the teacher eye.
Wouldn't that also be something that someone with autism, type 1 autism, might get in trouble for as well? Because again, it's not literal enough.
They could. So there's another overlap right there. Yeah. They could.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So, so Linda, how has living with NVLD shaped your approach to personal and professional relationships?
I would say personal, I've had to learn a lot of strategies on my own.
Mm-hmm.
Because people thought that I was being rude. And I still ask a lot of questions. But if you, people that know me that on my inner circle, they don't mind. But some people will look at me funny, you know, and I do notice that now because I'm older now and I studied this and I've learned some tricks, you know. Or sometimes they won't show me the facial expression and then I won't get that they're annoyed with me. But I do know when to stop asking questions.
So explain to us why you ask questions all the time, because I know in your book, you told stories about with your family, like, you know, you were just constantly
yeah.
asking questions and people around you would get irritated.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because I couldn't pick up anything else. I was only getting 7%. So I was constantly asking questions all the time. Like when I was, I would just use my words. So this example isn't asking questions, but it's when the kids would play in kindergarten, they would play house. So all the girls would pretend to do, you know, things that their moms did in that era. Now we know
right.
men do these things too, but, you know, making beds, cooking, cleaning. And the
yeah.
and the boys were pretending to, like, mow the lawn and right.
Oh, geez.
So I wasn't observing that visually. I was not picking up on all that. So I did what I knew.
Good how- for you.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a good thing, right? I did what I know best. I went in the kitchen and I started telling the kids how to make manicotti, play by play, every single step, because my mom would say it. This is what, you know, what we're doing. And then she would, you know, make it and she'd explain what she was doing because she was teaching me. So nobody, the kids didn't want to hear that. You know, so I didn't know that at the time. So I didn't really have very many friends. I was always like an outsider looking in. Yeah. So that's one example.
And that's so sad, right?
Yeah, it is sad.
You're trying so hard and you don't understand why. Like, why is everybody else able to make friends?
Right. And most people that BLD don't have any friends, especially kids. I mean, I'm working with several kids right now. They have no friends at all. It's very, it's heartbreaking. And, you know, there's a lot of depression and anxiety. So, like, we know 3 to 4%, almost 3 million people have NVLD. But out of that, I think it's like up to 16% also have depression and anxiety. So they're not even getting diagnosed. They're just getting that diagnosis because the anxiety. Can you imagine just not knowing? And, you know, so problems on the job. My accountant said to me, I never had anybody have so many W-2 forms. She said, like, in 1 year. Because I just kept going through jobs after job. And then when I became a teacher, I had to engineer my environment. When I'm more in control and I can use my strategies and I'm using my knowledge and what, you know, my gifts, I'm more in control. And, you know, so that was what I did. I haven't worked for anybody since 1997.
Once you know, is it like ADHD? Once you know what it is, then you realize that, oh, I just have a different brain. So I need to figure out some strategies that work for me.
You just have a different brain. Mm-hmm. Right. And your brain's A-okay because you taught us that. And it is okay. It is okay. And it's really getting other people on board because when we're masking, mm-hmm. right? And with ADHD, Dodson did a study that by the age of 12, children with ADHD get 20,000 more negative messages.
Yeah.
So you're counteracting. And this is, so it's very similar to NVLD.
Right.
And it doesn't even go up to adulthood. You know, so there can be a lot of depression and anxiety, but now, you know, things seem to be moving forward. And, you know, in the workplace, I was just at a conference and at the Learning Disabilities of America in February, and there was a lot on neurodiversity in the workplace.
Mm.
So that was very interesting. And when I was at that conference, I got the Harrison Sylvester Award.
Yay.
For dedicating my life to helping. And I was so thrilled, not because it just of all my work helping people, I feel like we're making progress.
Yeah.
You know,
I love that.
That we're making progress.
So if there's one key message you want readers to take away from your book, what would it be?
It would be, first of all, many people, I get a lot of emails and I get a lot of phone calls with people crying, but it's happy crying.
Yeah.
Because they're like, I didn't know what was wrong. I thought it was me.
Yeah.
You know, and the whole book is about validation, validation, validation. I always say like real estate's location, location, location. So once you read this, it's really helping a lot of people. And I've just heard from someone in Switzerland, a neuropsychologist, and he asked me a question on my screening. What does this mean? Because I'm using this with my clients and I have a couple psychiatrists using it and therapists. And so the screening is in the book and it's really helpful because a lot of people are saying they can now take this to the diagnostician and give them information.
Absolutely.
Because some of them don't believe in NVLD, but they will soon when it's in the DSM.
Okay, I'm going to ask you two questions. Normally, I only ask one as far as because I want you to answer it for NVLD and for ADHD. What do you think the key to living successfully with ADHD is?
I think, like I said, you have to engineer your environment. I make everything automatic pilot. I get all my socks the same color. I don't have to worry about it. You know, I put them in there, they all match. And my strategies are always changing because then they get boring to me. When I was teaching, I put my outfits together because I have a problem with that. Just making the coordinating them and putting them together. I would take pictures of different outfits that I could wear.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that, you know, and what goes with what? Like if I make smoothies, I would get like for the bullet, I would get like 7 bullet cups and then I would just fill them all up at one time and put them in the fridge. So I just try to make everything automatic and engineer environment. I try to hang out with as much ADHD people as I can. I read your group. I don't always comment all the time, but it makes me feel better that I'm not alone.
Yeah. And then what do you think the key to living successfully with NVLD is? Is it the same?
For the executive functioning, yes. But for the communication, you have to decide who you're going to disclose to and who you're not.
Mm.
Because people aren't always so kind, especially in the workplace. So you have to know how to handle that. Are you going to tell them? That's a whole other thing in the workplace with accommodations. You need to keep like a journal or a log of, okay, this is what I learned. This happened last time. This is how I handled it to see if that'll fit in anywhere else in another situation. You know, I have notes on that that I've done over the years, probably another book there. And reflective listening is really, really important because you have to reflect back. Okay, so this is what you're saying. I understand. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. Reflective listening.
So like with ADHD, where yes, there are things we struggle with and we either work on them or we hopefully are able to kind of give them to someone else, some things we just can't. Mm-hmm. Is NVLD right. like that? Are there positives? So there are some, you know, weaknesses, but there are also some great strengths with ADHD. Are there some great strengths with NVLD?
Yeah, absolutely. Verbal expression. I am learning thinking acts like with ADHD. So like in my book, I give an example of someone who a lot of other things, you know, on the job, she didn't do so great. Attention to detail, ADHD stuff. But she was really good at coming up with ways to do something different. Like I think it was fundraising, and then was training other people how to do it. So there you are using your thinking out of the box, creating this training program, and then the verbal expression of teaching others. So because she was so good at that, they let the other stuff slide.
So explain to me what you mean by verbal expression.
Strong vocabulary, very succinct in what you want to say. Animated, could be a great presenter. What the misnomer is that it's a double-edged sword, because people assume because you're so verbal like me that it's equal in all areas, and it's not. So how you diagnose NVLD is not by behavioral, because the DSM is all behavioral. This is by a neuropsych test. And you know, with ADHD, there is no test.
Right.
You can do some things. Like this is a difference between your verbal IQ and your performance IQ, which is now perceptual reasoning. And when there's a gap in there, so I always tell parents, look at those two things. When there's a gap, it used to be 15 points or more. That's indicative of NVLD. So some people may think, okay, well, you're so well-spoken that you're even in all these other areas, mm-hmm. and you're not. And so then they may think that you're lazy, or, you know, you're trying to get away with something, or they just aren't very understanding. And then, you know, you get negative feedback.
Okay. Say that again. A gap between verbal and what was the other one?
Your verbal IQ is typically average to above average.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Your performance or perceptual reasoning IQ is below average.
Perceptive reasoning?
Perceptual reasoning, yeah, and performance IQ. So,
okay, so what is perceptual reasoning for those of us who can't remember?
Well, that's a lot of visual spatial stuff too.
Oh.
Where you have to reason with that. It's like another thing is like, well, kind of with ADHD, like I can't see the forest from the trees. I will get so stuck in the details that I don't know the premise of the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And that makes it really difficult.
Okay.
You know, but not everybody with ADHD has that difficulty. So that's how you diagnose it. That's how we know, you know, it's a separate disorder.
Got it. Got it. Okay. So Linda, are you working on something that you want to tell us about?
I'm working on a couple things. I'm doing a book club for parents to go through the chapters and so they can better help their kids. I am working on becoming more of a speaker so that I can advocate. So at the NVLD project, I was their keynote speaker, and then I spoke when I got the award. So taking some classes on that, and more on neurodiversity in the workplace, because I really want to be an advocate. So I'm kind of, you know, I do a lot of brain training too, which is different than strategies. I'm working on a computer program for people with NVLD.
Wow.
Visual spatial stuff.
So where can people find you if they want to know more about you and what it is that you do?
Well, my websites are really long names. So the book is on Amazon, Misnamed, Misdiagnosed, Misunderstood.
I just want to say it's a really great book. It's so well written. The stories are, it's really good, Linda. And I don't say that if I don't mean it.
Thank you. So my webpage is my name, which is lindacaranzalis.com.
Did I mispronounce your name? I think I said Caranzalis. No. It's
He's Caranzalis. That's okay. A lot of people do that.
Caranzalis.
So it's also under advantageslearningcenter.com with two D's. Advantages with two D's. Like it's an advantage.
Yeah.
Advantageslearningcenter.com. And then I have to consolidate these two. But the other one is Linda Caranzalis, K-A-R, A, N is in Nancy, Z is in zebra, A-L-I-S. If you just put in Linda and VLD, all the stuff pops up.
Yeah.
But on that one with my name, that's where the podcast and everything is.
Wonderful. And we'll have all of this in the show notes. It sounds like the easiest thing for them is to just go to your name, Linda Caranzalis, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Linda, I'm so glad that we finally got to spend time together. Thank you so much.
Thanks for sharing your platform with me, because I'm hoping that this was an aha moment for many women who can't put their finger on what else is wrong.
Yeah.
Or maybe some have both, or maybe some are on medication and don't need to be.
Well, and
so I really appreciate you sharing it.
And it's so easy, because if you've had any kind of neuropsych evaluation, you already know, you know, well, you don't know what your numbers are, but you can pull it up and
you can pull it out.
A big gap between verbal IQ and perceptual reasoning.
Yes.
Sounds great. Okay. So that's what I have for you for this week. If you like this episode with Linda, please let us know by leaving a review. Yes, our goal is to change the conversation around ADHD, helping as many women as we possibly can learn how their ADHD brains work so that they too may discover their amazing strengths. And you know what? Your reviews really do help. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you here next week.
You've been listening to the ADHD for Smartass Women podcast. I'm your host, Tracy Otsuka. Join us at ADHDforSmartWomen.com, where you can find more information on my new book, ADHD for Smartass Women, and my patented Your ADHD Brain is A-OK system to help you get unstuck and fall in love with your brilliant brain.
It's me again, Tracy. You know how people often assume that if you have ADHD, you're just lazy, unmotivated, and not living up to your full potential? Well, I'm here to tell you they've got it all wrong, except for the part about not reaching your full potential. But that's only because you haven't found the right strategies tailored for your unique ADHD brain. And that's exactly why I wrote ADHD for Smartass Women. This book, it's designed to help you understand the different approaches that work for your distinct brain, inspiring you to become the best version of yourself right now. You can grab a copy wherever books are sold. And if you've already read my book, please take a moment to leave a review on Amazon and Goodreads. Your feedback, it not only supports me and my publisher, but it also helps other smart-ass women and their kids, friends, and colleagues find the strategies they need to thrive. Every review makes a huge difference. So go write a review now or buy the book now before you forget. Okay, back to our usual programming.